Welcome back to the Rehab Show. We'll tell you who that voice was because I can't tell you. But that's Sabrina Carpenter. Beautiful. Love it. Love it. Good on you, Sabrina. You got a beautiful voice in. Thank you for bringing us in for the next half hour of the Rehab Show. You're listening to Dr. Radio on Sirius XM Channel 110. I'm Dr. Jonathan Whiteson, and my guest is Dr. Lee Fleischer. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Pleasure. I hear it's your birthday.
Yes, it is my birthday. Yes, it just so happens, March the 19th.
And happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you so much. I know a few other people having birthdays today as well. And I wish them happy birthday, too, wherever they may be around the New York area. I know they may not even be up yet, but still. But thank you very much, Lee. Dr. Fleischer is the Robert Dunning Drips Professor of Anesthesia and Chair of the Department of Anesthesiology and Critical Care at the University of Pennsylvania Health System, and also Chair of the American Society of Anesthesiologists Ad Hoc Committee on Brain Health. And we're talking about limiting confusion after surgery, and of course the lines are open, 1-877-NYU-DOCS, it's 1-877-698-3627. If you yourself have been through surgery or you watched a loved one go through it and you've noticed some changes afterwards in terms of confusion immediately or perhaps even later, days or weeks afterwards, and you have a question for Dr. Fleischer, give us a call, 1-877-698-3627, or perhaps you yourself are preparing for surgery, you have an elective operation coming up, and you have heard about confusion after surgery, the potential for it, and you have a question about what you can do, give us a call, 1-877-698-3627. The lines are open. So Dr. Fleischer, tell us a little bit about confusion after surgery. How common is this, and what perhaps are some of the causes that cause confusion after an operation?
Sure. It's actually quite common in the elderly or those with sort of mild cognitive impairment. Both groups are at increased risk. It also depends on the type of surgery. But we see it anywhere from about 20 to 50% in the elderly. The confusion can be anything like delirium, which we used to think is that sort of hypermanic, that agitated sort of state after surgery, but we're beginning to learn that it actually can be sort of a hypomanic or a very quiet state. But if you start asking patients about confusion or questions that ask them about their orientation, it's very clear that they are much less oriented than they were prior to surgery. And the other issue that we at the American Society of Anesthesiologists and anesthesiologists in general are concerned about is that even after that acute state of the confusion, that cognitive changes, that change in memory, that inability to maybe drive as effectively can last for weeks to up to what we believe is about 3 months. We usually see people going back to baseline, even at the extreme at 3 months, although we're starting to ask the question, could it last longer? We can get into that more if you'd like.
Well, this is a very interesting topic because I think a lot of people recognize if they've experienced surgery themselves or seen someone go through it, that, you know, you go through an operation, you have anesthesia, and yeah, there's a little bit of sort of confusion as you're waking up. But I think most people, and not just members of the general public, but a lot of doctors, clinicians, healthcare providers, they also have this sense that everything goes back to normal. But what you're saying is in a certain percentage of people, not only does it not go back to normal, but it can last a long time.
Yes, we're actually starting to see this. There's a lot of different reasons. In the acute period, that period right after surgery, it's actually multifactorial. There's the stress of surgery, and we can come back to that. There's the drugs you get, both the anesthetic drugs, but also the drugs you get after surgery when you get home. One of the worst drugs to actually take is Benadryl, which we used to give quite commonly in the elderly, which causes quite a bit of confusion, as well as the narcotics, which with all the concerns about the opiate epidemic, we're trying to give fewer and fewer, as well as benzodiazepines, the Valium-like drugs. So it's not only the drugs that they get in the OR, but they might get for recovery. The other issue, which I'm sure many people are familiar with, is sleep is significantly disturbed when you undergo surgery, both from the effects of surgery and anesthesia itself, but you know, being woken up in the hospital constantly to get your vital signs. And a lot of people from that lack of sleep get quite confused. So one of the biggest things to do is getting people back into familiar surroundings where their sleep patterns get back to normal.
Yeah, so this is very interesting, and clearly this confusion after surgery is multifactorial. You related, you know, it's the stress of the surgery, and of course there's so many different kinds of surgery. There's the medications, the anesthesia, the pain meds, benzo medications in terms of, you know, Valium, things that help us relax, and Benadryl, one of the most common medications that people may take over the counter in terms of allergy or even sleep aid, these kinds of things, and sometimes often hidden in sort of combined preparations with things like Tylenol. And then, as you say, the sleep changes as well. What about like blood flow to the brain during operations? You know, we hear about the, you know, when people go through heart surgery, they go on a heart-lung bypass machine. So is oxygenation during surgery an important issue, and blood flow to the brain an important issue during the time of an operation?
Yeah, we're starting to study that. We actually think it's inflammation that occurs in the brain. You know, the body responds to the stress of surgery with an inflammatory response, and that helps us heal. If that occurs in the brain, that's one of the things that we think probably has the greatest detrimental effect. So it's, you know, we monitor oxygen delivery during surgery, although people are starting to ask the question by directly monitoring the brain, either through the EEG or through blood flow, will that lead to better outcomes? We don't know the answer yet, but it's something that's being studied extensively by anesthesiologists, certainly.
In terms of inflammation, we think of anti-inflammatories, and not necessarily medications that are anti-inflammatory, but is there anything that you can do as an anesthesiologist during surgery that limits the inflammation that might occur? You sort of implied making sure there's adequate oxygenation and adequate blood flow to the brain. Anything else?
People are studying whether steroids makes a difference, particularly.
Right.
We're not sure those trials, there's dangers of giving steroids, because they suppress the immune response. So we have to look at the risk versus benefit. Many individuals are starting to ask the question, can we use more regional anesthesia and less general anesthetics, less the gases, more intravenous anesthetics, and will that lead to better outcome? One of the concerns is if you give sedation on top of that, that may negate the positive effects of giving less anesthesia. So it's something that people are starting to talk a lot about, and that in many of the elderly, we are looking into whether giving more regional anesthetics, so
right.
A spinal for hip fracture, something that was done frequently. We actually have a big grant looking at this and seeing if that will reduce delirium. So sort of keeping people not quite as deep.
Yes. So there are certain things that can be done, and it's so great and so fascinating that this is being looked at this time, so very, very important. You're listening to Dr. Radio on Sirius XM, Channel 110. This is The Rehab Show. I'm Dr. Jonathan Weitzen, your host, and Dr. Lee Fleischer is my guest. Dr. Fleischer is the Robert Dunning Drips Professor of Anesthesia and Chair of the Department of Anesthesiology and Critical Care at the University of Pennsylvania Health System, and also Chair of the American Society of Anesthesiologists Ad Hoc Committee on Brain Health. We are talking about the topic and issue of confusion after surgery, and of course the lines are open, 1-877-NYU-DOCS, it's 1-877-698-3627. Please call in with your questions or statements or queries about this topic. We're heading to Michigan and welcoming Peggy to the show. Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're doing just great. Thank you so much for calling in. And you have a question for Dr. Fleischer?
Well, it's been a question on my mind, but yep. I was hoping for a comment. I had to have a cervical spine on three levels where they removed bone. I did not have plating, but I had nerve impingement. So I had a general anesthesia for that. And when I came, from the moment I came out of it until for at least 6 weeks, I had cognitive impairment. I didn't realize what was going on, but when I would go to try and add just two numbers together, I recognized all the numbers, but I couldn't come up with the answer. 2 + 2, I couldn't come up with the answer. And so for 6 weeks that happened. And then I had to go back to work, and so I probably still had some, and I'm not sure if it ended up going the 3 months that you had said. I then had to have two more surgeries. I had to have hips replaced, and the anesthesiologist told me, I had told him about my cognitive impairments the first time, and so we were going to be doing a spinal, but I was getting sedation. And he said, but one thing that does possibly affect it is nitrous oxide. And he sent me an article and an email later explaining some of it. And he said, when you have an MTHFR mutation, the nitrous oxide, I don't know all the chemical things that go on in the brain, but that doesn't work well and there is more cognitive impairment. If you have a dual mutation of the MTHFR, you could actually die with the nitrous oxide. So when I had my hips done, I've requested no nitrous oxide, and I, as far as I can remember or know, I had no cognitive impairment.
Oh, that's very interesting. Dr. Fleischer, in terms of, I don't know anything about MTHFR gene mutation and nitrous oxide. Obviously, Peggy, that was an issue for her. Any thoughts or insights on this in terms of relating it to confusion after surgery?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with that specific area. It's interesting, though, the fact that you had a spinal, we are using less and less nitrous oxide in anesthesia just in general, and that, in fact, since you probably were not intubated, that they didn't put the breathing tube down, it would be rare that they would give nitrous oxide. The sedation, hopefully, was a drug called propofol, which, unlike the benzodiazepines, is cleared quite quickly. So it may have been that they, in a positive way, avoiding the nitrous, but it may also have been that regional with a very light sedation and avoiding some of these agents that stay around a long time may have done a better job in your recovery. But it's important that if you've had a previous episode, that you actually tell the anesthesiologist, because clearly they gave you a very different anesthetic because of the type of surgery. And that led to clearer outcomes after surgery.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember as well, I've had several surgeries on my knees, and each time I remember specifically the anesthesiologist saying to me, have you had anesthesia before, and what was the outcome of that anesthesia? And they asked me if I remembered what I'd had, which I didn't, because I didn't ask the question of the anesthesiologist. But if you've had a bad experience before, we want to know what that's from. If you've had a good experience before, that means that it might be a good experience again going forward. So Peggy, thank you so much for your call. We're moving on to Virginia and Susan. Welcome to the show. Good morning, Susan.
Hi. My husband has just come out of, he had a colostomy, he had a ruptured colon, and then he spent 27 days in the hospital. So he had delirium, whether it was from the surgery or from the ICU. And I know sleep is very important, but he's having a hard time sleeping. And I was wondering if there was any advice.
Yes.
Also, he still has to have the surgery reversed, and I'm wondering if there's any recommendations to avoid all this the next time.
All right, I'm going to let Dr. Fleischer answer that in 2 seconds, Susan, but I recognize a voice, because you were just called with the earlier show, yes, with the earlier subject.
I did.
What?
I did.
You know,
my
this morning is for you. I'm so pleased we're answering all of your questions, and I appreciate you listening. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you calling back, Susan. You know, it's people like you that make this show. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to let Dr. Fleischer answer the question about the confusion, in the ICU.
Yeah, and I'm sorry your husband had to go through such stressors, and you're right. The ICU, there's a couple different things. One is hopefully he won't need to go in the ICU, and that's the best thing that could happen is a smaller surgery, not going into the ICU, making sure he gets sleep afterwards, and really orientation in the room. That's why we talk about and the ASA, part of what the Brain Health Initiative is really, we're going to be working with the AARP to provide sort of patient information of how to minimize these risks, of making sure that people wear their glasses, their hearing aids, even having family or friends come in quickly and say, and orienting you. Crazy thing, ideas like making sure if you watch a TV program or listen to a radio show at a certain time of the day can help you quickly orient. So if you know you're listening to Dr. Radio at a certain time, that's a good thing for orienting you. The other thing you have to worry about is there is almost like a PTSD syndrome starting to be identified with prolonged ICU stay. So trying to help someone get over that idea of the stress of being in the ICU, talking to others, a lot of the patient groups are very helpful, may help him go through the next surgery, because we have heard of stories of people remembering previous surgeries and anesthetics and actually having that effect from subsequent care. So that idea of almost flashbacks. So I think that the key would be minimal surgery, getting him out of the ICU, orienting him quicker, and then potentially seeing if he has a little of this post-traumatic stress of being in the ICU and seeing how to help him through, get past that.
Susan, thank you so much for your calls and for taking such great care of your husband. I mean, he's lucky to have someone like you. And keep listening to the show and keep calling in. I appreciate it. We're heading from Virginia to Massachusetts and Debbie. And I have to say, both to Debbie and to Dr. Fleischer, we have just a couple of minutes left in the show. So a quick question and a quick answer so we can get it all in. Hi,
very
Debbie.
Good. Hi. My husband's 58. He had an anterior temporal lobectomy of the brain. And I was just curious. He was very, very, very sedated, out of it, groggy for quite a while. But the thing that was most concerning and I wanted to know is his surgery began around 11:30. It ended around 5, and they couldn't wake him. He wasn't fully out of it till around 9 o'clock. And I'm wondering, is that an abnormal time for somebody to, for them to wake him so they could transfer him out of the PACU, or...
Yeah, that's a good question. How long does it take someone to sort of come around to be stable enough to leave that surgical site?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a difficult operation, and part of this may be the operation itself. Part of it may be the way he reacts to drugs. We hope people wake up within the hour, but delayed awakening is something, again, it may be the surgery, but it may be the drugs, that it's important to talk to people. And the next anesthetic, if he needs another one, you should alert somebody. But that is a prolonged, but again, unsure why.
Debbie, thank
another
you.
One, so that'll be good to know. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in, Debbie. We really appreciate it. We're sadly running out of time. Dr. Fleischer, in terms of guidance and advice in terms of prevention, do you have a couple of pointers that people can pay attention to in terms of trying to prevent confusion or delirium?
Again, the best thing would be if you have any mild cognitive impairment. So even if you're younger than 65, your spouse may notice you can't do the crossword puzzle as well anymore. Tell the anesthesiologist. That's something to know about. We don't know if it works, but exercise is good for almost everything else, including brain health in general. So starting walking before an operation is going to be really a very positive thing for your heart, your lungs, and we believe your brain. Orienting somebody after surgery, really important. Even, you know, putting on a tape of a grandchild that you can play it on an iPad.
All these things make a difference. Last but not least, is there a website? Is there a place where people can get more information?
Absolutely. So if you go to the American Society of Anesthesiologists website, ASAHQ.org/brain health initiative, or just go off the website, there'll be a link, and that has a lot of information for patients as well as providers.
Okay, and it's the American Society of Anesthesiologists. Is that the...
Absolutely. Yes. Brain Health Initiative. If you Google it, you'll find it.
Wonderful. And what's great, Dr. Fleischer, is that, you know, these questions are being asked. The research is being done. We're going to come up with answers. Answers always beget more questions, but that's how science progresses, and that's how we do better for our patients. I want to thank you so much for this half hour. It's been so fascinating, so interesting, and it's great for us to learn what we can do to be proactive. Thank you.
Thank you, and happy birthday again.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fleischer. We're heading to the break. When we come back, my friends will be with us. We're talking about Brain Injury Awareness Month. Stay tuned to Dr. Radio.